So we welcome all the devotees to this Sunday feast afternoon class. So we have been discussing a series where we discussed the primary 10 incarnations. And today the topic is Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam. I would like to openly proclaim my inability to speak on this topic. Not out of humility, but out of honesty. Because just to speak about the saintly personalities who represent Krishna is itself a very daunting task. What to speaking about the Supreme Lord Himself. Great personalities like Shukdev Goswami, Suta Goswami, they express their inability again and again that some people would also call us fools, but no matter as a form of duty, as a form of some fulfillment of expectations of authorities or other devotees. So sometimes a limited living entity also gets a task like this. So we know the Supreme Lord is infinite, and then we are talking of Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam, which means the Supreme Lord, especially in the form of Lord Krishna, Gopinath. He is the source of all these incarnations whom we have been discussing about in the past few Sundays, which includes Lord Matsya, Lord Kurma, Lord Narasimha, and Supreme Lord, Lord Ramchandra, one of the most famous forms of the Supreme Lord. And then after discussing about these personalities, now we have come to Lord Krishna. So sometimes there is a accusation that the Hindu people who follow the Vedic culture, seeing from a number perspective, actually people who follow Vedic culture are very less in number in today's world. The primary world religions are some other religions, and they see us as a minority in that sense. So they say that these Hindu people, they have a very strange habit of pushing their conception of God on human beings. So technically, you know, there is a word called anthropomorphism. I didn't want to speak it, but then this is the word. That because I am a human, so then I put my conception of God on a human being. And that's why we worship primarily, when you go around in India, you see temples of Lord Ramchandra, Lord Vishnu, who also almost has a human-like form, although with four hands. And then we have temples of Lord Krishna. Also sometimes you have temples of Durga Devi. So she also has a female human form. So when some personalities, they study our culture, then they say, oh, the Hindus have this strange habit of always seeing everything in the way they would like to see. So then when we study this Dasha Avataras, just as a foundation to what we are discussing today, one clearly understands that the Hindu culture is not at all anthropomorphic. We are worshipping the fish god. We worship the tortoise god, if you can call it that way. We worship the boar god. And not only these gods, but we also worship a god who has half the body of a animal, the lion, and half the body of a human being. So where is the question of worshipping only human gods? So from that perspective, actually, our conception of God is not just limited to any one species. It is the most widest, all-encompassing understanding of God, that the Supreme Lord cannot be limited to any particular body. If the Supreme Lord appears in a fish form, actually if you see the different gradations of evolution, it starts with Jalaja Navalakshani, Sthavara Lakshavimshati. The Padma Puran mentions how there are different levels of spiritual evolution. So the first 9 lakh species are Jalaja. Jalaja means aquatics. So the aquatics like fish and all those organisms who live in water, they are actually at the lowest end of the spiritual spectrum. And then come Sthavara. Sthavara are the trees which don't move. So starts with Meena Avatar, So the lowest species from the human perspective is the aquatic species. But we have a form of Lord Vishnu who even accepts the lowest species, the form of a fish. He is also accepting the form of a tortoise, which is amphibian. It is half aquatic and half staying on land. Lord Vishnu can also accept the form of a boar, which is considered very unclean. But then what is the purpose why he accepts that boar incarnation? He accepts the boar incarnation because the task for which he appeared demanded that. The earth was submerged into the bottom of the Garbhodak ocean. So the Garbhodak ocean is, the universe is half filled with water. That is called the Garbhodak ocean. And generally in any body of water, like a lake, so if the water is stagnant, there is very much dirt at the bottom of the water body. As any lake, river, if it has non-flowing part, then there is dirt at the bottom. So similarly, the ocean, which fills up the universe, also over a period of time gets dirt at the bottom. And when Hiranyaksha dislodged the earth from the orbit, then the earth fell at the bottom of the ocean. But it was muck. It was dirt. So why did the Supreme Lord appear as a boar? Why did the Supreme Lord appear as a meena? Why did the Supreme Lord appear as a tortoise? If we do not go into that, then we also can feel, oh, is it that the Supreme Lord is contaminated by the qualities of that particular incarnation? Like the fish are the lowest. The boars are not very clean. No, it is the Supreme Lord's mercy on all of us that the meena avatar, for instance, we'll quickly go through this, but the meena avatar, the fish incarnation. So why did he appear as a fish incarnation? Because in those days, the period was such, the incident was such that the whole of the earth and the universe was getting submerged under water. And then all species of life, the knowledge of the Vedas, was about to be submerged in water. So now if you want to save that situation, you need a form which is capable of protecting the knowledge, the species, life itself in that situation, which is water, water everywhere. So that's why the Supreme Lord, Keshava Dhrita Meena Sharira, Jai Jagdishar. That's why Keshav, he assumed the form of the mean. Why did he appear as a tortoise? Tortoise is such a dull creature. It can barely walk. It has a hard shell. So many times it is almost misunderstood to be a dead stone. So why would the Supreme Lord, whom the Hindus worship, why would he take such a dull form? So there's a story. So if we refuse to go into the story, if we are very insistent that no, I am what I am, I will not expose myself to the sun. The sun is shining outside, but I'll close all the doors and every part from where sunlight can enter in, and I'll also switch off the lights in the room. And then I say, oh, there is darkness around me. So that's something what we do usually. So why did the Supreme Lord appear as a boar? Because there was Samudra Manthan, there was a pact between the demigods and the demons, and then there was churning of the ocean that was necessary. So they needed a pivot. They needed some strong, in Marathi they call it Ravi. Chhach banate hai usse. So they needed some kind of a strong object which would be used for churning the milk ocean. But then when you have such a heavy object to churn an ocean, then you need a support at the bottom. So then who will act as a support for a huge mountain like the Sumeru mountain? So you have a mountain to be used as a churning rod. So who will act? So then the Supreme Lord, again out of his mercy, Keshava Dhrita Kurma Sharira, then he comes there. Keshava Dhrita Narhari Rupa. Why? To fulfill all the conditions that were sanctioned by Lord Brahma to Hiranyakashipu. Why did the Supreme Lord appear as the most angry incarnation of Bhrigupati? Bhrigupati is Lord Parshuram. So, because the Kshatriyas at one point of time had become so proud, they had become so arrogant, they were just unnecessarily killing. So then we understand that the Supreme Lord, Keshav, Jaidev Goswami, he uses the word Keshav, Krishna, Keshavadrita, Meenaru, Sharira, Keshavadrita, Kurma, Sharira. Then we understand, this Supreme Lord Krishna, he assumes the lowest form of an aquatic. Sometimes he assumes the low form of a tortoise, a turtle. Sometimes he assumes the low form, a dirty form of a boar. And sometimes he assumes the form of a very angry person. But it does not mean he gets contaminated by that. He does not get affected by that. So anybody who says that the Hindus worship only human gods, we should show them the Dasha Avatar Stotra. So no, Hindus don't worship human gods. Hindus worship everywhere, wherever the divinity is present. So in the first canto, fifth chapter, where Narad Muni is instructing Vyasdev, there's one shloka where he says, yes, you know, you glorify the Supreme Lord now. Now you write the Bhagavatam, where Krishna will be repeatedly described. So Vyasdev has written all the Vedic literature, including the Padma Puran, including the Mahabharata, where Krishna has played a very central role. But Narad Muni tells him, although you did this, although it's not that you have put aside Krishna in all the literature, but he says, na tatha hi vasudevasya mahima hi anuvarnitah. So two things you have not done. One is that you have glorified Vishnu, you have glorified Krishna in the Mahabharata, sometimes in the Padma Puran also, sometimes in the Skanda Puran also, but you have not emphasized the excellent position of Krishna. It means, yes, there is glorification of Krishna, but sometimes there is glorification of Lord Shiva also. Sometimes there is glorification of some other demigod also. So it has not been emphasized, and then he says, you have also not repeatedly stressed upon it. So Narad Muni, because he's caring for the people of Kali Yuga, he's telling Vyasdev, people in Kali Yuga, in the future, this is happening before Kali Yuga, he says, they will have two faults. That overall, manda sumanda matayo. Very few people will be intelligent to understand in a big page what is the central theme of this page. So if somebody gives us one page of text, so most of us will just go through the text and probably come up with some 10 or 15 points that are mentioned in the text. But if a question is asked to us, the author, when he wrote this text, he had some one central theme in his mind. He had one point in his mind. So can you tell me one theme that is common and around which this whole article is based, and that one theme is being explained in multiple ways in this way? Most of us will have difficulty trying to understand the central theme. So that's why Narad Muni said that now you write a book where you will specifically emphasize on Krishna Bhakti, because that is the goal. Ante Narayana Smriti. And then he also says, even if you emphasize and then people understand, oh, this is the goal of all the Vedic literature. Vedescha sarve ahameva vedyo. But there is a tendency amongst people to forget it also. So sometimes we hear something, we read something, and then we forget it. So that's why he says, second thing that you do is, you repeat it. So if you read the Bhagavatam, as you go, the first canto will tell you what is the goal of life. Then second canto, again it will tell you what is the goal of life. Third canto, every story from Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, Ambarish Maharaj, again and again it will come. How? We should all serve the Supreme Lord without any motivation, without any selfishness. So why is it repeated? It is repeated because we are forgetful. It is not repeated because Shukdev Goswami had a loss of explaining ability, or he had less material and he wanted to extend his explanations. It is his mood where he wants to clearly tell us what should we do in order to achieve perfection of life, and how, even if we forget it, out of his mercy is repeating it. So Keshavadhrita Meena Sharira, Keshavadhrita Narahari Rupa. I'll not spend much time on to prove how Krishna is the fountainhead of all incarnations. I believe over a period of time when we have discussed all these 10 incarnations, but still, you know, there is a doubt in people's minds, in India especially, that the followers of ISKCON, many times they speak about how Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So many years back, we were distributing books during the December marathon, and one person came to the table and he said, I don't agree with you. So I said, yes, all of us have a right to disagree. There is no problem with that. But what exactly don't you agree? So when he picked up the book, The title was Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the title of the book. And he said, I am a believer of Lord Ram. I am a Ram Bhakta. And I believe that Ram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So why would... Just a request to sit on this one. So, I believe that Ram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And you are saying Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, we try to explain to him that the person is the same. It's just that in different situations, you can see him in different ways. One of our acharyas gives an example of how a diamond, if you look at a diamond from different directions, light is reflected in different ways. So from one side, if you look at a diamond, it appears that there is some bluish tinge to the diamond. From one side, it is reddish, greenish, and so on. So the same diamond, if you look at it from different types, different angles, you can see different colors. Similarly, the same person, what to speak of the Supreme Person, even you and me also, in different situations, when facing or talking to different personalities, we behave quite differently. At office, we are very reserved. At our home, we are very casual. In the temple, we might be a little formal. With our friends, we are frivolous. With our parents, we might be respectful. With our juniors, with our children, we might be protective. So if an ordinary person of this world can assume different moods, why not the Supreme Lord? So we had some small discussion. It wasn't exactly an argument, but we tried to explain to him how Ram and Krishna, they are not two different personalities. As per the need, Keshav can assume a Meena form, Keshav can assume a Narhari form. Similarly, Keshav can assume an ideal Maryada Purushottam form of Lord Ram. But still, it didn't go quite well actually. He was very insistent. So, there's always that feeling that the ISKCON devotees have come up with this new conception that Krishna is the source of all incarnations. That Krishna is the source of Vishnu also. Krishna is the source of Ram also. Whereas all the time, in our childhood, we always heard that Vishnu Bhagavan hai. And all the incarnations that we primarily know of, they have all sprouted, they have all emerged from the original form, which is Lord Vishnu. So is it false or is it true? Or is it that ISKCON has come up with a new philosophy? What is the fact? Well, I'll just try to present a few simple thoughts on this. Because after hearing this class, if you are not able to clarify this with other people, I would say philosophically it's a failure of this class. Because Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam, but how? So even anybody who talks with you like this, my understanding is that I have always respected that. I don't deny it outright. But I explained to him, can two statements be simultaneously true? Like sometimes in a competitive exam, the question is, what is the root of 25? Square root of 25. And then the options are, 3, option A is 3, option B is 5, option C is less than 7, and option D is 10. So the right answer is more than 1. So even if you answer option B, which is 5. 5 is the square root of 25. You won't get marks. Why? Because there's another option that is also right. Even if somebody marks the other option, that is less than 7, he won't get it right. The right answer is B and C both. That is how competitive exams are designed. The questions are designed. So, is it possible that Vishnu is the source of Krishna and Krishna is the source of Vishnu? Can both be right? It depends on the frame of reference. So if you look from the frame of reference is just a universe, then primarily all the incarnations that come at different times, Ramadi Murtishu Kala Niyamena Tishtan, that there are scheduled incarnations at the beginning of Satya Yuga, at the beginning of Treta Yuga, at the beginning of Dwapar Yuga and then Kali Yuga. There is a certain, it's not exactly a timetable. Because when we call a timetable, when we would call it a timetable, it would mean the person who follows the timetable is subservient to the timetable. The timetable rules on the person who follows. Like there is a train timetable. So the trains are forced to follow the timetable. So in that sense, the Supreme Lord is never subservient to any rules. He is never adhin. He is always para. But still, there is a schedule which he follows willingly. So, primarily, there is one incarnation. We'll explain it a little bit. He's called Kshirodakshai Vishnu. Kshira is milk, and Kshirodakshai Vishnu is, he stays on a planet called Shvetadvip. Shvetadvip is the white planet. Why is it white? Because there, the ocean is of milk. Shvetadvip. So here, this Kshirodakshai Vishnu stays. And this Kshirodakshai Vishnu is primarily the source of all incarnations that come in a particular universe, including the Paramatma incarnation in our heart. So all of us here have the Paramatma in our heart, and he is also an expansion of this Kshirodakshai Vishnu. So yes, in one sense, in general, the feeling that is there that Vishnu is the source of all incarnations is very true. But when seen from a limited perspective, yes, Kshirodakshai Vishnu is the source of all incarnations in a particular universe. But then the question comes, if Kshirodakshai Vishnu gives rise to all incarnations, does Kshirodakshai Vishnu have a source? Yes, sometimes when we present the concept of God to modern students, then there is a question. If God gave rise to everything, who gave rise to God? Yes. We've always come through that kind of a logical understanding. Oh, a tree produces fruits, and the fruits produces seeds, and the seeds again produce trees. So there has to be, either you go back or you go in forward, but there has to be some, this produces this, this produces this. So similarly, when we presented God gave rise to everything, aham sarvasya prabho, then we say, then who produced God? So something similar to that, Kshirodakshai Vishnu, if he gives rise to all incarnations, does Kshirodakshai Vishnu have a source? Now for the first time, it is mentioned in the Bhagavatam that yes, God was also produced by somebody. So God gave rise to many things, but this God was also produced by somebody. Who is that? God only gave rise to God. So this Kshirodakshai Vishnu has a source in a personality. It is called Garbhodakshai Vishnu. Garbha is a womb, embryo in the womb. So similarly, the universe is also considered to be like a womb, and then it is half filled with water, and on top of that water is Anantashesh, and Anantashesh has a big, huge Vishnu who is resting. So he is called Garbhodakshai Vishnu. So then again the question comes, did this Garbhodakshai Vishnu come from somebody? Yes, this Garbhodakshai Vishnu, who is one in one universe, but then that universe has been produced by another Vishnu. So this God has also been produced by another God. Well, who's that God? He is called Karanodakshai Vishnu. Now most of us know only one Vishnu, but there are three Vishnus. So we are tracing back. So we were inside the universe. Inside the universe there was one Kshirodakshai Vishnu who was the source of all incarnations. He was the source of the Paramatma. Then we were still within the universe. He came from Garbhodakshai Vishnu. He was an expansion of Garbhodakshai Vishnu. Now for the first time we have come out of the universe. So Garbhodakshai Vishnu comes from Karanodakshai Vishnu. Karanodakshai Vishnu is so huge that from the pores of his body, from these tiny pores that we have on our body, the universe is generated. And then when he inhales, the universe again goes in. That is his huge form. So that's why sometimes this Karanodakshai Vishnu is also called as Mahavishnu. And this Karanodakshai Vishnu, does he have a source? It's very detailed. So if you really want the details, please read Srimad Bhagavatam. There are a lot of details. So, details not just of this world, but details of also the world beyond. It's a very detailed book. So this Karanodakshai Vishnu, does he have a source? Yes. He comes from one personality. His name is Sankarshan. There are four incarnations. Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. These are all Vishnu incarnations. So then this Sankarshan, who gave rise to Mahavishnu, does he have a source? Yes. So first we were within the universe, then we came out with outside the universe, but still we were in the material world. The Mahavishnu, the Supreme Lord, Karanodakshai Vishnu is in the material world. But when we shifted from Karanodakshai Vishnu to Lord Sankarshan, we transferred ourselves from the material world to the spiritual world. Lord Sankarshan is in the spiritual world. So then Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, they are created from one personality who is called Lord Narayan. So this Lord Narayan is in the spiritual world. Then again the question comes, is this Lord Narayan created by somebody? that Lord Narayan is also created by another Lord Sankarshan. There are two Vasudev Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Niruddha. Then that Lord Sankarshan, or those four personalities, Vasudev Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Niruddha, are they having a source? Yes. They are created from Lord Balram. Does Lord Balram also have a source? So that comes to the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. So then what is the difference between this Krishna, Balram, Vasudev Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Niruddha, Narayan, Vasudev Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Niruddha, Karanodakshay Vishnu, Garbhodakshay Vishnu, Kshirodakshay Vishnu? Practically there is no difference. What does it mean practically no difference? They have the same capability, they have the same power. However, the difference is in how much do they manifest or how much do they exhibit their power. For instance, one time I was traveling and then there was a group of wrestlers who were also traveling in the same train. They were coming for some wrestling competition in Bombay. So I saw something very amusing, that these are huge people. They are tall and they have these huge arms. And when they got down at Bombay, I got down with my luggage and I was just looking at them, how do they take care of their luggage. So then they called for the coolie. They had these huge bodies and they called for the coolie. And the coolies were also surprised a little bit, but they were happy. It was a happy surprise that they want them to lift their luggage. So I was just thinking, they are so well built. Something was preventing them from picking up their own luggage. Probably it was some social consideration, whatever it was. But I was just thinking that they have that strength, but they are not willing to exhibit their strength in that situation. They'll exhibit their strength at a proper place at a proper time when they lift those big, huge weights. Yes. So something like that, that all these personalities are equally capable. But based on what is expected, what is the particular situation, they exhibit some of their qualities and they restrain some of their qualities. Lord Brahmaji, in a very simple example, he says, just like there is one candle and that candle is used to light another candle and so on. So you light multiple candles. Now all those candles have equal power to give you light. But still, the first candle remains special, because the first candle lit all other candles. Similarly, he gives an example that the Supreme Original Lord was Lord Krishna. And from Lord Krishna, as we explained to you the series, he expanded one after another. And all these personalities, as far as their power goes, as their inherent capability goes, they are all equal to each other. But depending on the situation, they will exhibit some qualities and they will withhold certain qualities. But still, even though if we say all of them are equal, the first candle remains the special candle. And that is why Lord Krishna is considered to be the original Supreme Personality of God. So is Lord Vishnu the source of Lord Krishna, or is Lord Krishna the source of Lord Vishnu? You'll have to ask him, what is the frame of reference? Most people in this world, they see God as a very glorified, beautiful, nice order supplier. So the goal of life is to engage God in fulfilling our desires. This is not criticism, this is a description. This is what I have observed, and if you would like to agree, you can, yes. It may be any religion, it may be different religions. But the primary idea of God is, I have certain desires, I have certain wishes, many times there are demands. And can you teach me some way in your book which tells me how to get my desires fulfilled? I want to be successful. So what do I need to become successful? Similarly, I need to be known as a very famous religious man. So what should I do to be known as a religious man? So many times God becomes an order supplier, and actually we take the position of God. And then what happens is, our definition of success is in the material world. Our definition of success is in the universe in which we are staying. Mujhe bahut bada aadmi banna hai. Dhruv Maharaj, many times we glorify him to have the highest ambition. So Dhruv Maharaj wanted to have a kingdom greater than his great-grandfather. And his great-grandfather was Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma is the first living entity in this world. Almost everything belongs to him. So when he was dislodged from the position of his father's lap, he said, now I want a position which is greater than my great-grandfather. And we definitely, in that situation, we glorify him for that extraordinary ambition that he had. But to think of it, for our discussion's sake, we can see it from another angle, that because he's a child, he's a 5-year-old child. Yes, his desire is extraordinary. There is no doubt about it. Hardly I have come across a small child who says, I want to become the ruler of this world. Mostly children, you know, they will say, oh, I want to be a pilot. Usually I've seen, they have a fascination for planes. So they say, main bada hoke pilot banunga. Sometimes they say, main bada hoke firefighter banunga. Because they see how brave firefighters are. They fight with fire. So kids usually talk of becoming somebody like that. But Dhruv Maharaj is really extraordinary. He's saying, I want to become the greatest person, but within this universe. So the point was, what is the horizon of our vision? If I stand on the ground, it is said the horizon. Horizon is the place where apparently the sky meets the ground. Far away. So if you are on a flat ground, at some point you can see, because the earth is curving, you can see that it appears that the sky and the ground meet. Or if you are in the sea, at some distance it appears. So roughly it is said it is somewhere like 2 to 2.5 kilometers. Something like that. Or maybe a little more than that. This is something that I read a long time back. So that is where, that is the limit of our vision. We can't see the earth beyond that. However, if I come to, let's say, the fifth story of a building, if I'm on the fifth floor of a building, then my horizon increases. Why? Because my height has increased, so my vision can now see longer. In that sense, if I go to the 30th floor of a building, my horizon will, because my height has increased, my horizon will increase. Now you imagine I'm in a spacecraft, which is high up in the air. I can almost see the entire earth, at least the 50% of the earth that is visible to me. Is it not? So by increasing my height, my horizon widens. I can see more and more. Similarly, most of us who have not yet developed the maturity of spiritual vision, if we are really caught up in our wants and needs and demands and I, aham mameti, then it's something like spiritually we are at the lowest level. Then how far can we see? We can only see little distance away. So then, all our conceptions are defined by the area which we can look at. But as you become more and more spiritually advanced, as you go higher and higher, then you can see more and more, and then you can see, I didn't even know that such a thing exists and it can be beneficial to me. So Dhruv Maharaj is extraordinary in the sense, materially his horizon was the longest. But still he was within the universe. His definition of greatness was limited to the universe. The most interesting thing is, this Dhruv, who had the most extraordinary material ambition, later met one personality. Now usually when we talk of Dhruv Maharaj, we talk about his anger, we talk about his mother's guidance, and then we talk how he went to the forest and then he chanted Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and then after 6 months, yes, then there is a description of how he increased his austerity. He was just eating leaves, then he started eating dry leaves, then he was just drinking water once in 3 days and so on. Then after 6 months he came face to face with the Supreme Lord. So this is a typical Dhruv Maharaj story. But there is one small thing that we, a very critical detail which we usually miss out in Dhruv Maharaj story. What is that? That when he went to the forest, he met one personality. That is Narad Muni. It is Narad Muni who first tested him for his determination, and then he is the one who told him to chant Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. He said, whatever you want, God can give you. So even if you want something which is within the universe frame, the Supreme Lord can give you. And then yes, the Supreme Lord appeared to him. But the interesting thing is, as soon as the Supreme Lord appeared to him, the horizon of Dhruv Maharaj changed too drastically. So the horizon, the most he could see was within the universe, and that's why he said, I want a position within the universe from which nobody can dislodge me. But as soon as he met the Supreme Lord, he contacted the Supreme Lord, his vision changed to much, much, much beyond the material world. Then he says, I do not want anything from you. Now that I have got you, what do I want? So, if somebody has the vision of success which is confined by the material world, by the universe, then yes, Vishnu is the source of all incarnations. It is only those people who prefer who choose to see beyond the material world. Only to those people will it make sense that yes, if Vishnu is the Supreme Lord within this universe, but where did this universe come from? And if this universe came from somewhere, then the Lord of this universe, probably he also has a source. And then you backtrack and then you reach the conclusion that actually it is Lord Krishna who is the source of even Vishnu. So Lord Krishna is the source of all incarnations including Vishnu, but for all usual calculations, we can say that other than this long story that I spoke to you, for all practical considerations, from the reference point of one single universe, it is Lord Vishnu who is the source of all incarnations. So that's why I was mentioning how Narad Muni, when he told Vyasadeva to write the Bhagavatam, he is talking about the ultimate good. He is talking about the highest good. He is not talking of a temporary good. He is not talking of a limited good. That's why in scriptures other than the Bhagavatam, probably this knowledge will not be found. Because when we talk of ultimate good has to be the highest beyond all considerations. But when you talk of ultimate good, what is the definition of ultimate? So in other scriptures, if the definition is not really the highest, it is not really going to the most core level, then the ultimate can be limited. That is within the universe. So the highest good that can come within a universe is if you become a devotee of Vishnu. That's why Vishnu is the highest person. But if you're really talking of personalities who are looking at the world beyond the material world, those who have their eyes set on the spiritual world, only for those people, then Vyasadeva has been instructed to write the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's why in the Bhagavatam then, you have this kind of detailed information where you even go beyond Vishnu back to the spiritual world where Krishna is mentioned as the Supreme Lord, the source of all incarnations. So it was a little technical, but I just thought that we should be clear about Vishnu is the source of Krishna or Krishna is the source of Vishnu. So in the first canto, third chapter, there's an incarnation, there's a list of all the major incarnations that people are mostly aware of. It is mentioned, not only these are a little, this is a small sample. This is a short list of the multiple incarnations of the Supreme Lord. Actually, as many waves are there in the ocean, those many incarnations are there of the Supreme Lord. This is a very poetic way of saying infinite. This is a sweet way of saying that actually there are unlimited, you can't count them. And then it is mentioned, this famous shloka, which forms the title of today's class, Ete cha amshaha, amsha means a small part, amsha. Kala is small portion of portion. Like sometimes a beautiful woman in a poetic way is described as Chandrakala. Sometimes in poetry you will find this word, Chandrakala. So Chandrakala means you are so beautiful, you are just like a small part of the moon in the sky. So Ete cha amsha kala pumsaha. Pumsaha is the original personality. So this, all these personalities that I mentioned, the Sut Goswami is mentioning all these personalities, says all these personalities are amsha, either they are the portion or portion of Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. Indrari Vakulam Lokam Mridayanti Yuge Yuge. And then it mentions that this Supreme Lord Krishna, what does he do? So in this shloka he mentions he appears again and again. Mridayanti Yuge Yuge. He comes again and again to this world. Then the question comes, if he is the Supreme Lord, he is beyond the material world, why would he come? So some religions in this world, they also have struggles understanding this concept of why would the most powerful Supreme Lord, who is beyond the material world, who is the ultimate, why would he want to come to the material world? So there are two words in English. One is called transcendence. We have come across this word many times in Prabhupada's books. Transcendence is something that is beyond the three modes. And there's another word which is called immanence. Immanence is the opposite of transcendence. So transcendence means beyond the material world and immanence means within the material world. So the struggle in some religions other than those who follow the Vedic culture is God pure or is impure? So it's very clear God is pure. So if God is pure, it means he will never come to this impure material world. And that's why in many faiths, it is a mistake, it's a punishable crime to form an image of God. Because when we form an image of God with the materials of this world, either we do it with metal, wood, earth, glass, yes, one of these substances. So then it means we are forming an image of the all pure transcendental Lord with an immanent material. It means we are contaminating the Lord. That's why in India, when some people came many years back, they just could not tolerate how these people have so many temples where they have a form and they worship the form. Because to their dull eyes and to their dull intelligence, they could not understand if the Supreme Lord is so powerful, then for the sake of accepting the devotion of his devotees, for the sake of accepting seva from his devotees, he can accept a material form, he can accept an immanent form, yet remain uncontaminated. Just like we mentioned some time back, he accepts a mean form, does not mean he becomes a mean. He is still all pure. Although he accepts so many forms, he is not contaminated. He is Satchidananda in every form. Similarly, in a murti form also, which is made up of matter, which to our eyes does not seem to have life, it is the same Satchidananda Roop, but they could not understand it. So the struggle between immanence and transcendence is such a big struggle for many religions. That's why then what to do? So you cannot have a form. You cannot have a photograph. Then you just pray in a particular direction. So the place of worship is in one particular direction. So you face that direction wherever you are in this world and you pray in that direction. In the place of worship, there is no photograph. In the place of worship, there is no deity. There is no murti. In fact, it's punishable to have a murti and ascribe divinity to that murti. But Krishna, he is so pure, the understanding of Vedas is that, he is so pure, even if he comes in that temporary form, that is the godness of God. If I say, oh, this person is very strong, so how strong he is? No, he is infinitely strong. Okay, so then if he is infinitely strong, can he lift some heavy object? They say, oh, he can lift this heavy object easily. Then you say, okay. Can he lift an object that is heavier than this? You say, yes, he can easily lift. Can he lift a heavier object heavier than this? Oh, there, I think we'll have to check. It means he is not infinitely strong. So when I say that the Supreme Lord, when he comes to this world, there is a chance that he can get contaminated, it contradicts the greatness of God. So there is a story in this regard, just to keep it a little light. Yes, Sunday feast is supposed to be a little light. It's difficult for some people to keep it light. But, so it seems there was one time an argument between Akbar and Birbal. Then Akbar said, you know, you Hindu people, you are always worshipping God and then you say that God comes to this world. So I don't agree. Yeah, because God is so pure, he never comes to this world. Why would he like to come to this world? Then Birbal says, well, you know, you are the king. And especially when the king is arguing with you, you don't argue back. You keep quiet and wait for an opportune time later to explain. So one day it is mentioned that there was some kind of a boat festival and Akbar, these are not historical facts, please don't ask me for dates. This is what I have heard, I'm just passing it on. Yes, mostly it's an indicative story. It might not actually have taken place also, but this is what I heard. So there was a boat festival and the emperor, his queen and his new baby, newly born baby, is in his lap. And they are in that boat festival. And then Birbal, because he's a close aide to the king, he's also sitting in that boat. And something goes wrong. And it seems that in the shallow boat festival, which is happening in the palace pond, the baby falls into water. It's a shallow pond. But the scene is Akbar, the king, the emperor, who has a big, huge army, without calling for his army, without taking off any of his costly clothes, without taking off any of his pearl necklaces and anything, he just jumps into that water and saves the baby. So then Birbal asks him a question, Jahanpana, why would you do this? Why would you not ask one of your soldiers to do this? Then he says, this is my baby. There is no time to call out to a guard and ask the guard to save. This is my baby, I cannot take that risk. So this is the time it is mentioned that Birbal mentioned to him, similarly you were saying that why would God want to take an incarnation as per your culture? Why does not he just send somebody? इतना सब करने के लिए अगर नौकर है तो फिर नौकर को क्यों नहीं भेजते, खुद क्यों आते हैं? So this is the answer. You jumped into the water because you have love for your son. So where there is love, there is no consideration of position. There is no consideration of etiquette. It is emergency. Similarly, he said, in our conception, we don't worship God. We love God. We are not taught to respect God. We are taught to offer our hearts to God. हमको भक्ति सिखाते हैं हमारे कल्चर में, हमको पूजा करना नहीं सिखाते. पूजा हम करेंगे, लेकिन पूजा के पीछे भी हमारी भावना है कि हम प्रेम अर्पण करें. मम मन मंदिरे रहो निशी दिन कृष्ण मोरे. सो इफ यू सी दैट सॉन्ग, वेरी ब्यूटिफुल सॉन्ग. सो वन लाइन इज प्रेम प्रदीपे आरती तोमर. सो द पोएट, आई थिंक इट इज नरोत्तम दास ठाकुर और भक्ति विनोद ठाकुर, ही इज सेइंग, he is giving an analogy, it's a long analogy. He says, my mind is like a temple, my dear Krishna, you come and stay in the temple of my heart. Then what will I do? I'll offer you the aarti of prema. So he compares the different emotions that a devotee would like to offer to the Lord to different articles or different forms of worship that happen in a temple. You can check the song later. It's a very beautiful understanding that he presents. So in the temple also, even though it is Radha Krishna, we worship him, but it cannot be ritualistic. If ever you enter the DT room and you know there are some rules there written. So it is mentioned, what should be the mood when we enter the altar to worship the Lord, to dress the Lord, to offer aarti to the Lord? There has to be a mental participation. So there is something called as manas puja before you enter the altar. So manas puja is you prepare your mind in the right frame before you enter the altar. Many of us would feel that offering the aarti is more of a physical exercise. And then sometimes I have seen how when a young pujari has just come to the DT room and he is asking how to do the aarti. Very rarely I have seen a young pujari asking, okay, forget about all those things that seven times you move the lamp and then three times you move the arghya and all that. And then first is dhupa, then deepa, then arghya. So, I can write it down on a paper. Can you tell me the mood in which we should perform the aarti? When I'm offering dhoop, what should be in my mind? When I'm offering the deep, what should be in my mind? When I'm dressing the deities, what should be in my mind? Very rarely it happens that we get interested into the mood part of aarti, the mood part of dressing. Mostly I have seen devotees asking, Prabhuji, pehle dhoop hai ki deep hai? ओके धूप है तो धूप दीप. वो सात बार क्यों करते हैं? फिर 4, 3, 2, 4, 2, 3, 7 ऐसा क्यों करते हैं? वी गेट कॉट अप इन टू दिस डिटेल्स. और इवन वेन वी आर ड्रेसिंग, देन देर इज अ वे इन विच यू ड्रेस. यू फर्स्ट पुट द एंकल बेल्स, देन यू पुट द धोती, एंड देन देर इज अ सर्टन वे इन विच. सो देन वी ऑलवेज गेट कॉट अप इन टू द प्रोसीजरल डिटेल्स. वेरी रेयरली वी ट्राई टू फोकस ऑन एक्चुअली हियर इज द सुप्रीम लॉर्ड and I am getting a chance to do the seva, something like, I would not be so arrogant to make this comparison, something like every day in Vrindavan, Yashoda Mai, in the morning when Krishna would get up, she would bathe him, she would dress him up, sometimes Balaram would assist in dressing Krishna. Can you believe this? That every day, every pujari who dresses Krishna, wherever you are, at your home or in the temple, if you have a form of Krishna, you could see yourself, if you are so fortunate, if you can remember it at that time, it is something like, there is a gulf of difference, but we are following, we could say we are like the assistants of Yashodamai. So the mood in which deity worship is performed is said to be vatsalyaras. Just like if you are a father and you have a small girl at home, or you have a small son at your home, how do you take care of the child? You dress him, you tell him, don't eat too much, sit here, don't. There's so many instructions that you do. There's so much care with which you take care of your small young children. That is the mood of deity worship. So if we can actually understand that, then we understand that if people have problems with God coming to this world in the form of the murti, it's just their sheer ignorance of the truth and their understanding that because they have been taught so much to fear God. They have been taught so much to ask something from God. Very rarely they have been taught to worship God as a form of duty. And it is almost absent, almost, in many major religions of this world to love the Supreme Lord. So even though I am also born in India, but only after I came in touch with devotees, only after I came in touch with the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, there was this concept of loving God. Yes? Because mostly it is putting a paper with your demands, getting it fulfilled. Or sometimes we go a little bit beyond that and say, Are, aaj Mangalwar ka din hai, aaj to mandir jana hai. I have a cousin sister, today is her birthday, so I called her in the morning. And I said, so what's your plan for today? So she said, no, I'm just getting ready and I have to go to the temple. So I was surprised. Well, she's not so religious. I was not expecting that answer. Then I asked her, how come you're going to the temple today? She said, no, that's how it is it not? On your birthday you go to the temple. So she was looking quite surprised. She was thinking that I'll praise her or I'll probably glorify her because I'm staying in the temple. But I was just surprised because she's not somebody who visits temples regularly. But she told me, that's what, is it not? When on your birthday, at least once in a year, you go to the temple, get blessings. Why are you asking such a question? I also agree. I go to the temple every day. But the idea was that few people sometimes they go beyond the level of fear, reward, to the level of duty. Kam se kam birthday ke din to jana chahiye, hai ki nahi? And beyond that is Vaishnavism, the core philosophy of Krishna consciousness, where we don't fear Krishna. Why would we fear such a lovely God? There's no need to fear Krishna. But we also do not want rewards from Krishna. Ye do, aisa do, isko aisa kar dena, 6 mahine baad ye de dena, and so on. And also, if you are anywhere here, please don't take it as personal criticism. I'm just giving you a philosophical understanding. If we can go beyond fear to reward, wherever we are, if you are on ground floor, at least I would request all of you to go to the first floor. If you are already on the first floor, I would request you to rise higher to the second floor. And so on. So you check where you are. The lowest form of having a relationship with God is fear. Higher than that is reward. Higher than that is duty. I'm not fearing you. I don't even want anything from you. It is just my duty. It is my swaroop. I am your servant. You are my master. What else can we do? Beyond that is the concept of love. And Krishna comes into the picture only when we come to the concept of love. If we see God as a person to be feared, Krishna exactly does not fit into that definition of God. But very few people feared Krishna. There are personalities. Kamsa feared Krishna. It's one personality, and there are millions of devotees who are like singing and dancing and jumping around Krishna. So the proportion is very less. Very few personalities we know who demanded or who had an expectation of reward from Krishna. Yes, we know Sudama. But then when he went, the Bhagavatam mentions that it was primarily a pushing from his wife. Because she was concerned for her husband. She would see that her husband, and she was a dutiful wife, so she would see that because of poverty, Sudama would face many difficulties. So she had love for the husband, but she knew that the husband would not personally go to Krishna. So she kept on pushing Sudama, not for her personal wants, but out of concern for her husband. And then Sudama, out of his concern for the wife, shy, but still he went to Dwarkadhish Krishna. But then when he reached there and he saw the loving dealings of Krishna, he did not even want to ask anything from Krishna. So he spent some days in Dwarka without uttering a single word, just overwhelmed by the affectionate dealings of Krishna. And then, on his way back, Krishna asked him, did you forget to ask me something? He said, no, I just came to meet you. And then when he reaches his home, that is the time when he gets the reward. So yes, sometimes we hear this story, that Sudama was something who wanted a reward from Krishna. So there's one person who feared Krishna. There's one person who wanted reward from Krishna. There are few people who, we could say, they had a duty attitude towards Krishna. Re Krishna to bade hai, to humko to puja karni chahiye unki. Akrura, we could say. Akrura is one person we can see in the whole Bhagavatam. Krishna, we are talking of Krishna. Nandanandan Krishna. So he offers prayers to Krishna. It's our duty. To some extent, Vasudeva and Devaki also offer prayers to Krishna. But the multitude of personalities in Krishna Leela. If there are X number of personalities who are devotees of Krishna in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, we have one person who fears. We have one person who wants a reward from Krishna. We have one person, a few people who are on the platform of duty. What about the majority of the people who are in Krishna Leela? They are in spontaneous attraction. Beyond fear, reward, duty. That is why to appreciate Krishna Leela, somewhere, you know, we also have to be beyond fear, duty and reward. Unless we have that selflessness in us, unless we have that kind of an attitude that I'm just attracted to Krishna. He's just so beautiful. The way he stands, the way he smiles, the way he deals. Everything about him is so attractive. Unless you have that attractive attraction to Krishna, yes, that mood of attraction is there, you would not be attracted to this form of the Supreme Lord. Then there are other forms of the Supreme Lord. So then people who are fearful of material existence, they tend to get attracted to the forms of the Supreme Lord who are primarily protective. So Lord Narasimha. So people who are having a lot of problems in their life, usually they worship Lord Narasimha, seeking protection. Aapne Prahlad ko bachaya, humko bhi bachaiye. It's good. It's definitely good. We are talking of the mood, yes. So, you know, there are so many things that are here, yes. But it is mentioned that there are four very attractive qualities specifically of Krishna. Beyond even Lord Narayan or beyond even Lord Vishnu. So it is mentioned, one quality is his Rupa Madhurya. Rupa Madhuri, the way he stands. So just to look at Krishna, he stands in a threefold bending form. First, he is bent at his neck. He does not stand straight. Then another where he is bent is his waist. And then the third place where he is bent is at his knees. Now, one point of time, you know, in my college days, we were having an argument with some of our friends and they were just not ready. There's that enthusiasm. So, I could not control myself. So I said, "Arre chodo, tum kuch nahi kar sakte. Tum khada rehke dikhao Bhagwan jaisa." So he said, "Haan, main khada rehta. Kyun? I can do anything that Krishna does." There's a typical argument. So he tried to stand like Krishna. Yeah? So he first put his neck like this. Then he put his waist in another direction, stretched his waist another. And then he put his left leg straight and then put his right leg in front of the left leg in a bent form. And in 2 seconds he said, "This is the most uncomfortable position." So I said, "Forget about, you know, all the other, you first stand like Krishna." Yes. And this is just some fun. Yes. So, who could stand like this? So forget about, you know, his attractiveness and all that. Just the way he stands is so attractive. It is said that just like a hook is used to, you know, pull somebody or some object closer to you. Similarly, Krishna stands in a threefold bending form like a hook. So anybody who ever sets his eyes on this form of Krishna, where he holds a flute and is standing in a threefold bending, his heart is almost pulled like a hook. Now you cannot escape him. So that is his Rupa Madhurya. There's a section in the Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, chapter 2. Very beautiful section. Anytime you want to develop attraction for Krishna, you read the 3rd canto, 2nd chapter. That is a conversation between Vidura and Uddhav. So Uddhav is remembering the different activities that Krishna did. So one thing he mentions, this is a beautiful series of shlokas, but one thing that he mentions is, he says, in the Rajasuya Yajna, so many beautiful kings of the royal order came. So many wonderful demigods came. Lord Shiva was there. Lord Brahma was there. Everyone was very beautiful. Everyone was very attractive. They were very rich and opulent. But he says, when they looked upon the form of the Supreme Lord, Krishna, they all came to a unanimous conclusion. What is that? Jisne bhi inko banaya hai, this is the most beautiful creation of the Creator. Their vision, their horizon is within the universe. Yes. So say, Brahma ji ne sabko banaya hai. Brahma, the best creation that Lord Brahma ever made is this personality. They thought that Krishna is also of this world, so he is also a creation made by Lord Brahma. Unanimously they said, the most beautiful person that we have ever seen. There's another shloka in the Bhagavatam which describes that Krishna is so beautiful. Krishna is so beautiful that when he wears ornaments, the ornaments don't make Krishna beautiful like they do for you and me. He makes the ornaments beautiful. So just the fact that that golden necklace, the pearl necklace, the shark-shaped earrings and so many of these ornaments are put on by Krishna, they become glorified. They become very beautiful. That is the form of Krishna. We'll just check if there's some other descriptions of the beautiful form of Krishna. It is mentioned, Krishna is so beautiful that not only personalities of this world, the demigods, the kings and so on, but even Lakshmi Devi, who's the wife of another form of the Supreme Lord, Lord Narayan, one point of time she also was so much attracted to Krishna that she thought of giving up the company of Lord Narayan and she came to Vrindavan to participate in the Raslila. Now Radharani and Lakshmi, they are non-different, Krishna and Narayan are non-different, but as we mentioned, different situations, so different moods. Keshavadhrita, he assumes different moods. So Lord Narayan has a mood of Aishwarya and Lord Krishna has a mood of Madhurya, sweetness. So Lakshmi Devi, she has the most intimate companionship of Lord Narayan. She always sits, it is mentioned in the form of Srivatsa, she has close association on the chest of Lord Narayan. And in the form of Lakshmi Devi, she is always massaging the feet of Lord Narayan. Always in a service mood. She is the constant companion of Lord Narayan, Lakshmi Narayan. But at one point of time, this most chaste personality, Lakshmi Devi, she was also overwhelmed by the sweetness of Lord Krishna, especially when she saw him dancing with the cowherd young girls of Vrindavan. And she left the company of Narayan. And even today, if you go to Vrindavan, there is an area called Belavan. Or because Lakshmi Devi is there, today sometimes it is also called Srivan. So there is a temple of Lakshmi Devi. She is still at the outskirts of Vrindavan, praying to Krishna, please allow me entry into your Raslila. But then why is she at the outskirts? Why is she not allowed entry? Because to enter Vrindavan, you have to give up your Aishwarya, you have to give up your attachment for worldly positions, or, you know, that mood that Lakshmi Devi, she is not attached to worldly positions, but she has this mood that she is the queen, she is the goddess of fortune, she is the queen of Vaikuntha. And who are the other cowherd young girls who participate in Raslila? They are simple cowherd girls who take cow dung patties in their hands, who are just simple cowherd. Sometimes they might be illiterate also, in a worldly sense. So it's difficult for Lakshmi Devi to follow in the footsteps of the cowherd damsels of Vrindavan. It's difficult for Lakshmi Devi to take cow dung in her hands. So she is praying to Krishna, with my Aishwarya, would you allow me? And Krishna is telling her, well, that is Lord Narayan. You have that association of Lord Narayan in that mood. But if you want to participate in Vrindavan Leela, you have to take cow dung. Basically, you have to be a simple person. Complicated people do not get entry into Vrindavan. So, not only Lakshmi Devi, then now we are going higher and higher. There's a story in the Bhagavatam. In essence, it is that Lord Narayan himself, the Supreme Lord, Karanodakshaya Vishnu, Mahavishnu, at one point of time, he also developed a desire to see the most attractive form of Krishna. But then how to do that? Because he is so huge and he has these duties that he is just sleeping. And when he breathes out, the universes come out. And when he breathes in, the universes go in. So if he leaves that duty, something will go wrong seriously. So he can't leave that position. So what does he do? He knows that Krishna is staying in Dwarka. So he steals a baby. There is a Brahmin in Dwarka whose wife is giving birth to babies. And as soon as the baby is born, the baby dies. And the Brahmin is disturbed that I am staying in Dwarka. Here is the Supreme Lord Krishna present. Here is the Supreme Lord Balaram present. Pradyumna Aniruddha is there. And that time even Arjun was there, Partha was there. So he comes complaining to the king, Ugrasen Maharaj, and he says, what kind of a king you are? When you are the king, how can a young child die? And that too, I am a Brahman, so I am not sinful. So there is no karma involved here. It would be seen as a weakness, as a limitation of the ruler if there are some strange things happening in the kingdom. So his child is dying, but he's putting the blame on the king. So you're an irreligious king. That's why these kind of things are happening. This does not happen once. This does not happen twice. This happens 9 times. So 9 times this Brahman's wife gives birth to a baby and the baby dies. And every time he gets an assurance that the baby will survive next time. So 9th time when it happens and he's complaining to the king, everyone is just surprised, how can the baby die? Because in the presence of such personalities, against the wish of Krishna, it cannot happen. Arjun, he becomes excited. He says, oh, this is something against even my friend Krishna. So he says, this time when a baby is born, I will myself stand with Gandiva. Main hu abhi. Abhi dekhta hu kaun aapko bacche ko haath lagata. And then he creates some kind of a fence around the Brahman's house and he's standing on guard. And the most interesting thing it is mentioned is, because Arjuna has heard the complaints of the Brahman that 9 times the baby was not protected by Lord Krishna. In this story it is mentioned, he did not pray to Lord Krishna. So he prayed to Lord Shiva. He said, hey, Lord Krishna is himself there and 9 times the baby died. So bhi 10th baar pray karke kuch fayda nahi hai. So he did not pray to Krishna and he prayed to Lord Shiva for protection. But the most interesting thing is, not only 9 times the baby died, the 10th time also the baby died. So Prabhupada, if you see the Krishna book, he comments there that, you know, when we take shelter of the demigods, then the phala, antavattu phala tesham, that the fruit that they give is also temporary, so then he could not serve. So then Arjuna had taken a vow, if I am not able to protect with my Gandiva bow, I will enter fire. So now is the time for Arjuna to enter a fire. So when Arjuna is about to enter fire, then Krishna, the sweet Krishna, the friendly Krishna, he comes and he says, you can't enter fire, Baba. We have to check out what is the situation. So before entering fire, it is mentioned Arjun, because he had taken that vow to bring the soul back, the child back. He went to the highest planet, searched for the baby. He went to Yamraj's planet, searched for the baby. He went to the Rasatal planet, searched for the baby. He could not find the baby anywhere. Within the material universe, he could not find the baby anywhere. Then as a final resort, he said, self-immolation. Khud ko abhi jala denge. So then Krishna says, why do you take this vow first? Huh? Anyways, you've taken this vow, so now it's my duty. Kaunteya pratijani hi name bhakta pranashyati. So he makes him sit on the chariot. It is Krishna's chariot. Daruka is driving. And then the 4 white horses of Krishna, they are. And Krishna does not go to the higher planet and lower planet. Because Krishna knows where everything is. His horizon is the widest. So he takes the horse straight to the limits of the universe. And he goes beyond the shell of the universe. And Arjuna is saying, where is this? Where am I going? So it is mentioned the outermost part of the universe is pitch dark. There are these mountains called Loka Loka mountains, and beyond that is completely dark. So anyways, the chariot, it goes, it pierces the shell of the universe. And beyond the shell of the universe, beyond the darkness that is on this side of the shell of the universe, on the other side is, it is extraordinary illumination in the form of Brahma Jyoti. So there are people who stay very close to this temple who are interested in that Brahma Jyoti. So that Brahma Jyoti is there. And then this chariot of Krishna and Arjun, it crosses the Brahma Jyoti and they enter the Vaikuntha planets. And there they see, yes, there they see this Mahavishnu. And then this Mahavishnu is so, it is mentioned, Krishna book Prabhupada writes, there is a huge palace, it is made up of big pillars, and there this Lord Mahavishnu is there. And when they see this Lord Mahavishnu, he is so huge. And then Lord Mahavishnu offers obeisances to Krishna. Yes. Then it is clarified, Lord Mahavishnu said, actually I had a desire to take your darshan. So for that I was arranging this whole pastime of stealing the Brahman's child. And in such a way that nobody could understand how this child is disappearing, how it is dying. And even when in the presence of Krishna Balram. So why would Krishna and Balram allow that event to happen? He wanted to fulfill the desire of Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu is also attracted to this form of threefold bending form of Krishna. So how fortunate we are that Srila Prabhupada, wherever he went, any city he went, he established these forms. Yes? All the ISKCON temples, Radha Ras Bihari, Radha Giridhari, Radha Govindji, Radha Kunj Bihari, Radha Vrindavan Chandra, and here's Radha Gopinath. All these temples of Krishna, all these temples of ISKCON. Yes, sometimes you have Jagannath Ji also. Sometimes you have Ramchandra. Yes, in Delhi if you go, because it is the capital of the country, it has Lord Ramchandra ruling. He is the personality who represents good ruling. But primarily the central altar is always Radha Krishna. Why? Because Prabhupada, he wants to give us the sweetness of Krishna Leela. So, the ordinary living entities, Lakshmi Devi, even to the extent of Lord Narayan, they are all attracted to the form of Krishna. It is said that the transcendental body of Krishna resembles the lotus flower in 8 parts. His face, 2 eyes, 2 hands, his navel and 2 feet. All of these are compared to very beautiful, attractive lotus flowers. We'll go quickly to the second part. The first was Rupa Madhuri. Then is the Venu Madhuri, the way he blows his flute. There is nobody in this whole existence who can play a flute like Krishna. The Bhagavatam describes when Krishna plays his flute, the non-moving objects start moving and the moving objects become sthira. So the Yamuna, whose natural behavior is to flow, it becomes still. And stones and objects that don't move, they melt. It is mentioned that calves who are drinking milk from their cow's udders. So when they're drinking from the udders and they hear the sound of the flute, they don't even take in the amount of milk that is there in their mouth. They just stabdha ho jate. They still have that milk in their mouth and the cow is also still. Everything just stops. The bees are humming before Krishna's flute is heard. They just stop. The birds are flying, they immediately stop. The deer are grazing, they just stop. And it is mentioned not only they stop, but their eyes, because nothing flows from the eyes naturally, is it not? So when the flute starts playing, there's streams of tears. But these tears are tears of happiness. They are tears of extreme joy. They are thinking, how fortunate we are that we are in Vrindavan, where the most beautiful, attractive person regularly plays upon his flute. So this is the flute of Krishna. This flute of Krishna, when he plays, Srila Rupa Goswami is describing, the sound vibration created by the flute of Krishna wonderfully stopped Lord Shiva from playing his dim-dima drum. He plays that drum. Lord Shiva, if he is dancing, he stops. So this flute, such an attractive flute. Even an ordinary person of this world, when he plays a flute, it's so sweet, is it not? Can you imagine when Krishna plays his flute? So Lord Shiva stops playing his drum. The 4 Kumaras who are in meditation, Om Shanti, they also become disturbed. Sankshobhya, that is the word that is used. They become agitated. And then Lord Brahma, who was sitting on the lotus flower for the creation, he also becomes astonished. Where is the sound coming from? And Anantadev, the snake incarnation of the Lord, who holds all the universes on his hood and he is very stationary and that's why all the creation is there on his hood, he also starts shaking like this. He's trying to enjoy the flute sound. So very beautiful. Poetically, Lord Chaitanya is describing to Sanatana Goswami, there is a very beautiful chapter in Madhya Leela. If you ever get time, you read this. The opulence and sweetness of Krishna. So this is the section when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is speaking to Sanatana Goswami. And he is describing. So it is mentioned at one point of time when he is describing the sweetness of Krishna. Lord Chaitanya is so overwhelmed because he is remembering and is speaking to Sanatana Goswami. He clasps the hand of Sanatana Goswami. He is just so happy to speak about Krishna, glorifying Krishna. He is telling Sanatana Goswami, Krishna is like this. So happy, he catches the hand of Sanatana Goswami. Yes, sometimes when you are standing and you are about to fall, then you want support. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so happy, remembering Krishna's sweetness, almost that he is about to fall, so he is clasping the hand of Sanatana Goswami. When you are too happy or when you are too sad, you know, you do that, yes? You catch the hand of somebody who is close to you. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he clasps the hand of Sanatana, he is so happy. So he says, the vibration of Krishna's flute is just like a bird that creates a nest within the ears of the gopis when he plays his flute. And always remains prominent there, not allowing any other sound to enter their ears. So once you hear the flute of Krishna, after that day, it will be difficult for you to hear any other sound. Beware. Nor are they able to concentrate on anything else, not even to give a suitable reply. Such are the effects of the vibration of Lord Krishna's flute. So in another prayer, Rupa Goswami is addressing all of us and saying, my dear friend, he's addressing all of us, he's saying, if you have any desires to enjoy this world, if your horizon is limited, so do not ever go to the banks of Yamuna on a moonlit night, because around midnight there is a young boy there under a tree, he plays his flute. And if you happen to see that boy playing his flute, and if you happen to hear that flute, you will not wish to go back to your home to fulfill all those desires that are there. What, you know, this is like a roundabout way of saying, it's very attractive. You will forget all the pleasures of this world if you happen to hear the flute of Krishna. Then, the third sweetness of Krishna that is not found in anyone else is his Leela Madhuri. So Leela Madhuri means his very beautiful activities, his very beautiful dealings. So one, there is so much, you know, there is so much here, but something that we would like to mention here is the sweetness of Krishna in his childhood days. So I have some examples here, one of childhood days, one when he was young, his dealings with Arjun, the Pandavas and so on. But when he was a small child, one time the gopis went to Yashoda Mai and they complained, this Krishna, he comes to our home and he eats butter. So then Yashoda Mai is so innocent, she believes Krishna. So she said, yes, Kanha, aapne makhan khaya kya? So what does Kanha say? Kanha say, Maiya, main nahi makhan khayo. Yes. So I spoke it rather fast, but I would like to. So he's saying, main nahi makhan khayo. So Yashoda Mai hears, Maiya, main nahi makhan khayo. Yes. But the Acharya say, when he's looking at the gopis who have come there to complain, he's saying, Maiya, maine hi makhan khaya. So Krishna is so sweet. He's looking at Yashoda, he's saying, main nahi makhan khayo. And to the gopis, maine hi makhan khayo. And then Yashoda Mai is saying, just see, he's so innocent. So that is the sweetness of maine hi makhan khayo. Now you decide what he's speaking. So this is how he would have loving dealings with the gopis. One time, in the youthful days, one time Krishna got late. So now this is all the philosophy part is over. Now we'll just come to some stories from Krishna Leela. So Krishna one time got late in meeting the gopis. So the gopis said, why are you late? Then he has a very good reason. He's saying, oh, actually I was serving my Guru Maharaj. So because I was serving my Guru Maharaj, you know, I'm so honest, such a nice disciple, so I got late. So your Guru Maharaj, who's your Guru Maharaj? We also want to meet his Guru, your Guru Maharaj. So, oh well, he stays on the other side of the Yamuna. He's Durvasa Rishi. So Durvasa Rishi is your Guru Maharaj. We also want to visit Durvasa Rishi. So they go to Gokul if you go. Then on the other side, Mathura, on the other side, there is still that place where Durvasa Rishi came. But they look at the mighty Yamuna, it's flowing. Now how do you go there? And usually when Krishna and gopis meet, it's not the daytime, where you have a boatman and then you pay and go. So it's night time. So how would you cross? So they look at Krishna and say, "Arey, aap to gaye udhar aa rahe, to humko bhi bataiye, kaise karte hain? How do I go across?" So it's simple. You go to Yamuna and you say, "We were with Krishna, who is the most purest brahmachari." So they look at Krishna and say, "Are you what, joking or what? You and us, you know, we meet in the middle of the night and you say you're the most best brahmachari." So no, try it out. So the gopis, they're simple, yes? They have that innocence. So they go to the river and they say, "Dear Yamuna, we want to cross you. And right now we were with the most purest brahmachari Krishna. And lo and behold, the Yamuna parts." So they are looking at each other. What was that? They say, okay, discussions later. Now we need to serve Durvasa Rishi. So they cross over to that side. And they make all the best preparations with the milk and the dahi that they have. And they serve Durvasa Rishi. And Durvasa Rishi is very happy. He eats all the preparations in one moment. Yes, he has that mystic power. So as he gives a burp, then the gopis say, "Oh, now we want to go back." So now how to go back? Because now we were not with Krishna. That time they said, "We were with Krishna. And that's why we want to go to the other side. So now they ask Durvasa Rishi that how do we cross back? So Durvasa Rishi is simple. He says, go to Yamuna River and say, right now we were with Durvasa Rishi who just drinks Durva grass ras. So this is a Vraj Katha. Durva grass, to uska ras nikalenge to kitna hoga? Ghas ka ras kaise rehta hai? So we were with Durvasa Rishi who just drinks Durva ras. And that's why it is mentioned Durvasa is a common in Durva ras. So you just had a big feast that we cooked. And all in one snap. And you are saying Durva ras be there. So no, you go and speak that. So they're innocent. They come to Yamuna and they say, we were just now with Durvasa Rishi who just drinks Durva ras. Lo and behold, the river parts. So they cross to the other side and then they are talking with each other. Kaam ho gaya, abhi thoda discussion, abhi charcha karenge. So now they are saying, ek thug guru, ek thug chela. So ek thug guru, ek thug chela, dono beach thugni. So this Yamuna is also part of that conspiracy. Yes. Then they say, jaisa guru, jaisa chela, vaisi thagni. Vraj song. So these are some of his sweet pastimes. One pastime that I like is how. So you know it's beyond 2:30. If anyone is getting late, I humbly beg you that you can proceed ahead for the prasad. There's a few points remaining, but we don't want to delay anybody. Yes. When the Pandavas were in the forest. And Duryodhan especially wanted to trouble them. So he troubled them when they were in the palace, but now he is trying to trouble them even when they are in the forest. So this same Durvasa Rishi, he sends and requests him, you approach the Pandavas at this time in the afternoon. So by that time they have already taken their lunch. And then they had that Akshay Patra, from which unlimited food would come out till the star mark was, asterisk mark was, condition supply. Draupadi should not take her food. So if Draupadi takes her food, then the Akshay Patra does not supply food. So he tells, aap wo dopahar ko jana. To jab Draupadi ka khana ho jayega, uske baad mein jana. So Durvasa Rishi comes there, and then Yudhishthir Maharaj, he wants to serve, so he says, we'll prepare some food for you, meanwhile you take your bath. And they go for it. But imagine Durvasa Rishi has come with 60,000 disciples. And Draupadi is looking at Yudhishthir Maharaj. 60,000 disciples, that too of Durvasa Rishi. And Durvasa Rishi is very famous for cursing. Yes. And some of his disciples can learn some qualities from the guru. Yes. So it can get actually complicated. So now they are thinking what to do. But Draupadi is very much, just like the Pandavas, she is very much dependent on Krishna. One of the names of Draupadi is Krishna. His great Shamanand Prabhu in today's morning Bhagavatam class, he spoke about this. So Krishna remembers Krishna, Vasudev, Nandanandan Krishna. So as she is remembering him, Krishna comes. He always reciprocates with the desires of his devotees. And as he comes, Krishna says, I have come and I am hungry. So do you have something to eat? So now Draupadi is thinking, I called Krishna to solve the problem that I don't have food, and now there are some personalities who are coming to eat, and now there is a bigger problem. That I asked you a question to get an answer. Now you are replying to me with another question. So I called you to solve my problem. Now you are asking me for food. But it is mentioned, what is the mood of Draupadi? So Draupadi has a big problem trying to figure out how to feed Durvasa Rishi and his 60,000 disciples. And now there is another problem. To solve that problem, she called Krishna, and now Krishna is also asking for food. So this is also a problem. But it is mentioned, Draupadi, when she is thinking of the second problem, how to feed Krishna, she completely forgot about the first problem. So now you and me, we get caught in the number game. So they are 60,000 aur ek vyakti ko khana khilana ek taraf. Aur abhi Krishna ek vyakti ko khana khilana ek taraf. Kaun sa bada problem hai? For an ordinary man, we would say, the original problem remains the original problem. This is a much smaller problem. No, that's not the way devotee thinks. Devotee says, what will happen? Durvasa Rishi will curse. So Krishna is always there to take care of us, is it not? But if Krishna becomes unhappy with me, मैं आपके पास आया, मैंने खाना मांगा, आपने दिया नहीं, दैट्स ए मच बिगर प्रॉब्लम. सो इट इज मेंशनड व्हेन कृष्णा आस्क्ड हर फॉर सम फूड शी कंप्लीटली फॉरगॉट द फर्स्ट प्रॉब्लम एंड शी इज कंप्लीटली ओवरवेल्म्ड नाउ. कृष्णा इज आस्किंग मी फॉर फूड एंड आई एम नॉट एबल टू सप्लाई फूड. सो शी इज रियली क्राइंग, शी इज डेस्परेट एंड शी सेज अनफॉर्चुनेटली देयर इज नथिंग हियर. सो इट इज मेंशनड दैट डे दे हैड प्रिपेयर्ड स्पिनच, पालक. So any other sabji, you know, it's like a solid sabji. So usually it gets scraped. But that particular day, because it was palak, there was some small crumb that was still somewhere there in the vessel. And Krishna says, sab khatam ho gaya, haan, khatam ho gaya. Hey, thoda aap dikhaiye humko. So that vessel, it still had a small piece of spinach, palak. So Krishna put his hand in that and Draupadi is saying, you can't eat that. That is our remnants. Devotees eat the remnants of the Lord. The Lord should not be allowed to eat the remnants of devotees. Simple rule. But does this rule apply to Lord Ramchandra? When Shabri is taking a bite of those berries and checking which one is sweet and which one is not and she's offering, Lord Ramchandra ate that. So something similar to that is Lord Krishna. The vessel has the remnants of the devotees. The devotees have already eaten. So already their bellies are full and now there's a small crumb there. Krishna puts his hand and before anybody can stop, Krishna snatched the poha, chipped rice from Sudama. Sudama is not willing to. How can I offer this to Krishna? Krishna snatched it. Similarly, Krishna put his hand in that vessel, took a small crumb of spinach, put it in his mouth and he was satisfied. Yasmin tushte jagat tushtam. You water the root of the tree, the entire tree is nourished. So it is mentioned, when Krishna derived satisfaction from that small little piece of spinach, he was completely satisfied. But that little satisfaction of Krishna produced a long series of continuous burps in Durvasa Rishi and his retinue. You know, that whole group that he had in, they were taking a bath in the river, suddenly they looked at, they started burping so much. And then, not only burping in a physical way, not just some hiccups or something, they actually felt their bellies were full. And now, Durvasa Rishi is thinking, Yudhishthir Maharaj, he told me you come for prasad, and I told him I'll come for prasad, and now I'll not be able to fulfill my promise. Now, last time, I misunderstood some king who was a Vaishnav. Anybody knows, last time Durvasa Rishi, he had a dealing with a Vaishnav king, Ambarish Maharaj. What happened at the end? Yes? He misunderstood that king. He said, ye to raja hai, bhogi hai, main to sadhu hoon. Is it not? Then at the end of the pastime, he understands, sorry, you are a Vaishnav. Vaishnav means you are very powerful, because you are dear to the Supreme Lord. So as he's burping, and as he's feeling a satisfied stomach, he has a lot of heart palpitations. Why? Because remember, last time also I had an interaction with a devotee king. And I had to pay through my nose. This time there are 5 devotee kings. And I promised to them that I'll come. And now they're waiting for me. And it seems, after Krishna ate that, it seems that Yudhishthir Maharaj sent Bhim. Arey, thoda dekho kya hua, bulao unko. It seems when they were burping and they were going through this dharma sankat, abhi kya hoga? Ambarish Maharaj, he forgave. What about them? So it is mentioned, Bhim came and from it, come. You know, it is mentioned they did not even complete their bath. They just ran away with their wet clothes and they said, no! Now this time we don't want to have a interaction with a Vaishnav king. Last time was enough. Kaan pakad liya humne. It's very sweet actually. It is a story of protection. But how does Krishna protect? That's also an art, is it not? Many times, if we are powerful, and if somebody comes to us for protection, we'll say, "Thik hai, aapko protect, aap baju meri, aap piche aa jaiye, main dikhata hu, main kaun hu." We'll show so much valor, we'll probably fight in such a way to make a clear understanding in that person. Aapko kisne bachaya? Kaun? Main. I am the one to whom you should be eternally grateful from this moment onwards. Samjhe ki nahi? Is it not? When we do a small act of some good to somebody, we will remind him every day. Do you remember that day? Yes? Aap dhar, aap thoda sankat mein the, kisne bacha? Is it? If you look at Krishna, he's so sweet. We're talking about sweetness of Krishna. He helps his devotees, but he helps in an invisible way. Yes? Is there any other instance where Krishna helped in a big problem? And he helped in an invisible way. Nobody understood who helped. Can you think of something? Draupadi, yes. So Draupadi is attempted to being disrobed. And she's crying out, "Hey Govinda, please help me." And nobody knows anything. Yes, the sari just becomes unlimited. And she's saved. And nobody knows what is happening. It is only Draupadi who knows. It is only Krishna who helped me. Can we develop this attitude of helping people in an invisible way? Can we take charge of a chariot where during the 18-day war, somebody else is fighting? He is killing all the generals, he is killing all the people, and everyone is saying, "Are Arjun kaise lad raha hai?" But the secret of all that fighting was that 1 hour sambhashan, that 1 hour conversation that Krishna had with Arjun. Invisible, is it not? He just spoke, and then for 18 days he is fighting, and the hero of the war is Arjun. It is definitely not Krishna. Invisible help. So this is Krishna. His sweetness lies in keeping himself behind the curtain. He will rather help in a very sweet, invisible way. And then the fourth sweetness of Krishna is his bhakta madhuri, that his devotees are also very special. So if you look at the devotees of Krishna, Rupa Madhuri, Venu Madhuri, Leela Madhuri, and then Bhakta Madhuri, the devotees of Krishna are also very sweet. Not the sadhaka devotees of Krishna, those who are trying to be devotees. Those who are already devotees, yes. They are also very special, they are also very sweet. And they offer so much to Krishna in loving dealings, they don't have any expectations. So Pandavas, if you look at them, so many heartbreaking situations they underwent. They never even once complained to Krishna. "You showed me Virat Roop in that Mahabharata war, which you are everything. Then what happened to all the difficulties that came in our life?" Never once they ever had a complaint against Krishna. The gopis, they are so arrogant that they can blame the creator, Lord Brahma. Yes? He is such a respectable personality. But they say, "Truti yugayate tvam apashyatam." One truti is one form, one small fraction of a second. He says, "Truti yugayate." Ek chota sa kshan bhi hamare liye ek yug ke saman asahya ho jata hai. Hum usko sahan nahi kar sakte. Kyun? Tvam apashyatam. Because sometimes we have seen when we blink for a moment, the vision is hampered. Now because we are conditioned souls, so we get conditioned. So right from our birth, we are just blinking our eyes. We don't realize in between, the vision is hampered. It is only the gopis who are having genuine love for Krishna. So that one fraction of a moment when their eyes blink, they can't see Krishna. That is the reason why they blame the creator. They said, "Jadavadikshatam pakshmakridresham." He says, this creator, Brahmaji, jadavadiksha. Jad buddhi hai unke. He could not create eyes that don't blink. So that we could have unlimited vision, continuous vision, unbreaking vision of the Supreme Lord. So they are so, in one sense, they do not mind blaming Lord Brahma. But Krishna, the person whom they want to see, and separation from Krishna for one truti, for one fraction of a second, gives them that adhikar to blame Lord Brahma. That Krishna, how long was he separated from the gopis? So first 11 years, Krishna is with the gopis. And then almost many, many years later, he meets them one time in Kurukshetra. So roughly speaking, it's not mentioned exactly how many years, but let's say 70, 80 years later he meets them in Kurukshetra, because by that time he has his great grandchildren also who come to Kurukshetra. The description is there. So think, we have seen from the gopis' perspective, but we are talking about the bhakta madhuri. So we've seen from the Krishna's perspective, but now from the gopis' perspective, they are so deeply in love with Krishna that one fraction of a moment seems to be them like a yuga, and for that they are ready to blame to Lord Brahma. But the same gopis, when Krishna left them and went to Mathura and then never returned, for years together, he never returned, and he just gave them a promise, "I will come back." And based on that promise, they just survived. They just lived crying and crying, just hoping because Krishna has promised, Krishna will come back. So if you look from the gopis' perspective, how dedicated they are, how amazing they are, that based on one sentence promise from Krishna, who has a long history of cheating, Maya, main nahi makhan khayo. It's a cheater. But the cheater Krishna, when he speaks one sentence, I will come back. Truti yugayate. So if one truti is one yuga, how much is 70 or 80 years for the gopis? It is multiple times of yugas, unlimited. But they tolerate it. Why? But they are also special devotees. They are not devotees of any other person. They are not devotees of Vishnu. They are not devotees of Narayan. They are devotees of Krishna. So this is the whole complete picture. Krishna Leela includes Krishna and Krishna's devotees. So when we understand this aspect of Krishna, then we understand Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam is definitely the sweetness of Krishna, but Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam is also the sweetness of his devotees, exemplary devotees. The Pandavas, exemplary devotees. No matter what happened, never complained, always gave their hearts to Krishna. The gopis, no matter what happened, always gave their hearts to Krishna. So there is something to learn about the sweetness of the Supreme Lord, but there is also something to learn about the devotees of Krishna. In no other pastime, then the nearest pastime, a human-like pastime, is Lord Ramchandra. So Lord Ramchandra, you know, there is that small incident from Lord Ramchandra's pastime when Lord Ramchandra brought Sita Devi back from Lanka. The residents of Ayodhya, they doubted. Is it not? So, even when it comes to Ramlila, and even when it comes to eternal, you know, Ayodhya Vasis, there is a situation where even they fell short. Yes? They said, you know, that washerman, he says, I'm not like Ramchandra who will accept his wife even after long separation. Yes? So, the context is totally different. But I'm just saying, they are always loyal to Lord Ramchandra. When Lord Ramchandra is going to the forest, it is mentioned that all Ayodhya also goes to the forest. And then, at night, you know, he just runs off. They are still sleeping, and morning time he gets up early and runs off, and that's how he gets separated from the Ayodhya Vasis. So Ayodhya Vasis' love for Ayodhya Pati Ram, not a doubt. But there is a situation where even they, you know, they got separated from love for Ramchandra. But in Krishna Leela, especially the Braj Vasis, you see, no matter what happened, there is not a single instance, there is not a single emotion experienced ever by the Brajavasis that ever separated them from Krishna. So that is Krishna Leela. Sweet Krishna and sweet devotees of Krishna. And we are so grateful that even with all our anarthas in our heart, just because we happen to be somewhere around the time when His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada appeared on this planet, He has given all of us entrance into the highest. We were discussing in the beginning of this class, the original planet of Shri Krishna, which is beyond all the spiritual worlds. He is trying to give us entry, He is trying to give us information about that supreme spiritual planet, where the divine couple, Shri Shri Radha Krishna, they are always there. So I will just end with this. One time, His Grace Jananivas Prabhu, he was asking a question. So he asked, in Mayapur temple, there is deities of Radha, Madhav, and then there are Ashta Sakhis. So he asked a question to the audience. He said, in Vrindavan, when Krishna plays the flute, he is playing the flute to call all the gopis. So he is saying, on this altar, the gopis are already there. Radharani is already there. And still Madhav is playing the flute. So for whom is Madhav playing the flute now? So now all the audience is looking here, and then he says, now Madhav is playing the flute to attract all of you. So why is Gopinath playing flute? Radharani is there, Lalita Devi is there, Vishakha Devi is there, Ashtasakhis are also there, we can't see them. Now Gopinath is playing his flute so that you and me can offer our hearts to him. So that is the facility that is being offered. So this is this Krishna. Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. So I'll stop here. Thank you very much for your patient listening. It's my fortune to get a chance to speak about the Supreme Lord Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Please remain seated. There are few announcements, and after that there will be kirtan. So first of all, we would like to welcome all those devotees who have come to our temple Sunday feast program for the very first time. Our reception team of devotees standing near Hanumanji Archavigra, they will offer you special Mahaprasad of Shri Radha Gopinath Ji. And if you have any question regarding ISKCON and its activities, or about this temple and its activities in particular, they will happily answer all your questions. We would like to request all those devotees who have come to our temple for the very first time, please rise in your place so that we can welcome you properly. कृपा करके जो पहली बार इस मंदिर में आए हैं आप अपनी जगह पर खड़े हो जाइए ताकि हम आपका स्वागत कर सकें. हरे कृष्णा. वी वुड लाइक टू थैंक यू फॉर कमिंग टू आवर टेम्पल एंड टेकिंग आउट योर वैल्यूएबल टाइम. सो थैंक यू वेरी मच. वी वुड लाइक टू प्रे टू श्री श्री राधा गोपीनाथ जी दैट लेट टूडेज प्रोग्राम बी द ऑस्पिशियस बिगिनिंग ऑफ योर लॉन्ग एंड ब्लिसफुल कृष्णा कॉन्शियस लाइफ एंड दैट मे यू कीप coming back to our Sunday program and enthusing us by your presence. Hum Shri Shri Radha Gopinath ji se ye prarthna karenge ki aap log yahan par aate rahiye aur aaj ka ye jo karyakram hai aapke ujjwal krishna bhavanamay jeevan ka shubharambh thehre. Let us all welcome all these devotees.